Hello, Cubs fans, and welcome to a brand new edition of Cubs on Tap. I am Ron Luce. I am joined by my long-lost friend. I know you've been on the mic at least a few times recently. I haven't seen you, though, of just you and I being on a microphone probably since the offseason. But I am joined today by Mr. Nick Hudson. Buddy, how are you doing, all things baseball aside?
I'm doing really well, man. It's been fun to get into the season. We're a little deeper now, so I love baseball, so it's been fun.
Heck yeah. Yeah, I mean, the season is in very much full swing. Just about every team now has played pretty much at least like 35 games is kind of the median. Some teams have played a little more, like the Dodgers have played 40 already, as if the Padres, because their early start, but most teams kind of hovering in that upper 30s already. It's still a gauntlet to go. I mean, we're still staring down the barrel of 120-something games for all these teams over the course of the regular season. But we are here to focus on three games specifically, Nick. And those are the three in this Padres series. Cubs win an important series over the weekend against the Brew Crew. I was here recapping that one on Sunday night. And then the Padres come to town. They had to come from Arizona, so you're hoping the Cubs could take advantage of it. They lose Monday, they win Tuesday, and then they lose again today. We're going to get into each one of these games a little bit separately, Nick, but just overall thought kind of right off the top here about this series. What did you learn about the Cubs in this series?
Yeah, you know, there were some really highs. There are some lows that we're going to get into as well. But overall, this series just felt like a good series of character. They showed that they came back from getting a six spot put on them the night before to battling back. It was a very, when you have a moment where you lose the lead like that so late in the game, and that walk off, I was hoping we'd carry the momentum into today, but obviously baseball is baseball. Sometimes you're just going to get beat. So we're going to talk about the highs and the lows of the series, but I think that's ultimately how you can sum it up, is that there were some highs and there were some lows.
Indeed. I think that's incredibly well put. It did feel like a little bit of a roller coaster this entire series. And we're going to talk about it. And it wasn't just a roller coaster in the sense of the games and the outcomes. I feel like it was also very much a roller coaster in the sense of emotion. And we're going to touch on how that's important here in each of these games. Because in Monday's game, it was an old friend returning to the friendly confines. Yu Darvish took the bump for the San Diego Padres. And for the Cubs, great news, Justin Steele returned for his first start since opening day after suffering that hamstring injury. Justin Steele looked really good, Nick, in his first outing. 4 2/3 scoreless innings, gave up just the 3 hits and a walk and struck out a pair. Early thoughts on the first start back for our ace on Monday night.
It was so great to see him back out there. And, you know, obviously on a little bit of a pitch count there, but still to go 4.5, that's just, it was really nice. The stuff was very sharp. Only to walk one coming back from an injury like that is very, very good to see. So I hope they build on that. And obviously I'm upset that they couldn't give him the W.
Of course.
But Cubs bullpen's going to bullpen, and, you know, the rest is history. But I'm excited to see him back. He's a vital arm in this rotation for sure.
Indeed. And I think, you know, sitting here talking about this Brewer series over the weekend, you know, we talked about how great, obviously, Javier Assad and Shota Imanaga have been. We'll talk about Shota here in a little bit in more detail as well. And then how Jameson Taillon coming back kind of helped level set the rotation when guys like Ben Brown and Hayden Wesneski had to step up. Well, now you mentioned that bullpen, right? The bullpen's going to bullpen. Now that bullpen gets a little stronger because Ben Brown moves to the bullpen as a result of Justin Steele coming back as well. Some of the numbers from that Monday night game that are important here, we mentioned Steele's line already. His ERA still is under 1. He has a 0.96 as of now. Yu Darvish looked really good in this one, though. Went 5 innings, so he did get the win as the pitcher of record. He only gave up 3 hits as well, only walked 1, but struck out 5 in his body of work. And it was the bullpen for both sides, Nick, that ended up giving up the runs. The Cubs getting absolutely tattooed. Richard Lovelady effectively only gets through that third of an inning where he relieved Steele. He was bounced before even recording an out, giving up those 3 earned. Palencia came in, got through the rest of the inning, but not before giving up 3 earned as well. And it was those 6 that was all the Cubs, or pardon me, all the Padres would need to beat the Cubs on Monday night, even though Brewer gave them 2 shutout innings out of the bullpen and Owsley gave them a shutout inning as well. Suarez came in, locked it down with a 5-out save in that one. And the Cubs had a chance. That eighth inning was an absolute tease. You know, they got one back with Morel. They got one back with Gomes. And then, you know, you load the bases with nobody out. And then Suarez comes in after the PCA strikeout and gets two quick outs effectively to end the rally. I mean, Nick, why does it feel like this Cubs team is really good at not scoring when the bases are loaded?
I know. And I'd love to see the runners in scoring position stats with that bases loaded specifically, because it feels by the eyeball test that they just – the clutch is just not there this time. As soon as that happened, I'm like, game over. It's done. I really had confidence, especially if you load the bases with nobody out. You're going to have confidence. You're going to score at least one or two. But I really thought they were coming back. I really thought they were tying it and maybe going the next step and even taking the lead there. But once those two quick outs happened and they got out of the inning, I'm like, yeah, it's over.
Yeah, it really did feel that way. And it was deflating. It was certainly deflating after not being able to get the rally. So the Cubs fall short on Monday night. But Nick, you put it perfectly. This team bounced back. And that Tuesday game was a lot of fun. I was out at the ballpark, as was Juice, as was Tyler, came into town to join us in the Wrigley Field bleachers. And we had a hell of a game. It was just as much a pitcher's duel as the night before. Vasquez given up just one earned run in his 4 1/3 of work, and that was the Cody Bellinger home run, because Belly returned to the lineup on Tuesday. This Cubs team continues to get healthy. This was, I think, the one true silver lining of this series, Nick, was this Cubs team is getting healthy. You see Steele return on Monday night. Bellinger comes back on Tuesday and joins the lineup, hits again today on Wednesday in the lineup as well. And we have some news, and we'll talk about a little bit about Seiya Suzuki here in a few minutes. But they got the one run out of the Bellinger homer. Things are going great. Shota Imanaga absolutely cruised, gets you into the eighth inning, and then Jurickson Profar, two-run shot. I mean, that was just a good piece of hitting from Profar. That splitter down in the zone, he golfs it out of the ballpark. It just lands in the first row of the bleachers. And at that point, Nick, at least from being there, it was an incredible just – change of emotion in the ballpark, because it went from everybody's buzzing when Shota comes back out for the eighth because he had been so good to, oh shit, his entire gem might be ruined by one pitch. And it wasn't even a bad pitch. It was just an even better piece of hitting from Jurickson Profar on the other side.
Exactly. The pitch wasn't even in the strike zone. It was very low. It was just a really good piece of hitting. So that was sad. And, you know, you're going to have that feeling of, did Craig leave him in a little too long? I liked him coming back out there. And the fans did, too. I liked to see him coming back out there. Sometimes maybe I do feel that way with Craig. In this moment, I don't think so. I think there's just, like you said, a great piece of hitting. And it was an opportunity, and they took advantage of it. But Shota, dude. Shota, it's just so exciting. In the pre-show that we had, I was so high on him, and I'm like, guys, like, get on the train, it's gonna be awesome. I really, I watched every start he had in spring training, pretty much every pitch, and I haven't been this excited in a while for a pitcher, so it's been great. He has not disappointed the slightest, so I'm jealous you guys got to see him live.
Hey, and so much so, to the point where, you know, you have analysts on MLB Network, and they're having this huge debate about Imanaga versus Yamamoto because of how hot Imanaga has been out of the gate. Obviously, you get the age factor with Yamamoto, he only being 25, but still, even Shota's a 30-year-old, still has a lot of good baseball left in him. He doesn't throw incredibly hard, so you would think that velocity is going to age decently well over the life of the contract. But again, a guy that is just starting to capture the hearts of Cubs fans everywhere. But Nick, in our you know, movement along in this show here, I do want to pause and come back to what you just said, because I think that's a very interesting topic that I don't think has been talked about enough, but I feel like is going to start being talked about more if it continues to happen. And that is Craig Counsell leaving Shota in, despite being, I think he was at 97 pitches when he finished the seventh inning. That, to me, I agree with you. In the moment, watching him come back out, I think Cubs fans are super excited within the ballpark. And in addition to that, Juice brought up a great point when we were sitting there talking about it. He said Profar is a switch hitter, but is typically better from the left side of the plate. So by keeping Shota in there for at least that first, you know, for those first two batters, I think the idea was, hey, let him try to get two quick outs and let Profar have to hit from the right side, because I think Profar is hitting like 330 already this season. I mean, he's had an unbelievable start to the year. Make him hit from his less dominant side, essentially, and say, okay, then pull him and then go to the bullpen. I think, though, mulling it over now for just under 24 hours here, to me, that just shows that Council has very little trust in this bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
That's 100%. What that tells me. Because, and I get part of it, you know, you hear Council talk about it, and he's always like, well, it depends who we have available that day, right? And that's absolutely part of the equation, right? Some days you're going to have your better guys available than more than others. But you have to look at that Monday night game. He had to throw four guys out of the bullpen. Now, granted, none of them were the super high leverage guys, right? It wasn't a Hector Neris. It wasn't a Mark Leiter Jr. But you had those guys, right? Mark Leiter Jr. was supposed to be this wizard against lefties because of his splitter. And he had almost the opposite splits for being a right-handed thrower. To me, it just shows that beyond guys like Leiter, beyond guys like Neris, and maybe beyond guys like, I don't even know who else you could argue.
Almonte
probably. And maybe now Ben Brown, even though we really haven't seen Brown a ton out of the bullpen just yet.
Out of the bullpen, yeah.
To me, that's the only guys that Craig can really trust right now. And that, yeah. And again, Shota's a workhorse, right? Like, that's the type of guy that if you're going to do that with, he's the guy you're going to do it with. But I think that's something that we as Cubs fans need to keep a little bit of an eye on is especially as these pitchers get closer to that, you know, because he's been willing to pull guys with 80-something pitches. When the guys get closer to that 100, if they're left in, that's when I think we're going to really have to start raising some red flags and be like, hey, Craig does not trust, you know, 60% of this bullpen, 65% of this bullpen, because he's leaving starters in to the point where they're seeing the rotation the lineup for a fourth time, not just a third time through.
100%. And statistically, as you know, that's very hard for a pitcher to go a fourth time through the lineup and not give up contact. And obviously Shota is a little bit of a anomaly in that case, because he is such a he's a magician out there. He's amazing. So in that moment, I didn't hate it, but I did say out loud verbally to my grandpa at the table, I said, it's because he doesn't trust the bullpen.
Yeah.
And I felt it in that moment, but at the same time, you know, when he came out before giving up that home run, I was psyched. I'm like, yeah, Shota. So fan, manager, it's, you know, two different things.
100%. It was, another electric start from him, and he's been so impressive this year. I love what Council had to say about him in the presser, in the postgame presser, of just like how important he's been to the team and how he's just been so good. And, you know, he's escaped so many jams, and like, he was even like, I want to see what the, you know, what the stats are on, you know, how many multiple, you know, base runners he allows. Cause he doesn't allow, he'll allow one guy on, and usually more often than not, that guy gets stranded. Like, there is no, you know, bases loaded really at all against a guy like Shota. I mean, he might let two guys on base, and that's usually when he locks it down and says, hey, I got this. I'm going to take care of it. We're done, and moves forward. But, an interesting talk through here as well. Darren says, exactly, Ron, especially Wesneski still in today facing batters for the fourth go around. There's no trust in the pen. 100%. And again, these starters have been incredible. Like, I there is some validation of like, well, yeah, trust your starters. Trust these guys that have been really, really good for you. But at the same time, it's like there is zero trust in that bullpen right now. And especially because they don't have a true lefty option. I'm sorry. I know Lovelady was a low risk, you know, acquisition in the offseason, but he has not lived up to the hype, in my opinion. And if we're being brutally honest, out of all the guys they signed in the offseason to those like minor league deals that had the potential of becoming bullpen arms, to me, Brewer has been the best one of them all. Like, he's actually looked really decent lately as this kind of damage control guy late in games when they need to just stay in it and you know, and get through innings. He gave them two innings on Monday night of clean baseball. He's a guy I think maybe that they might consider using in some more higher leverage situations than, you know, Daniel Palencia, who obviously just went to the IL as a part of the whole chaos. Keegan came up, Palencia goes to the IL, Canario goes back to Iowa, Belly returns, but it's really going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye on, Nick. But after the Profar home run, everybody's all right, down and out, and the Cubs rally. And talk about a hell of a rally late in this game. They come out in the eighth inning and get the job done. It wasn't pretty, but they get it done nonetheless. And pulling up everything here, Mike Tauchman comes in, takes that walk. Guy's got a crazy on-base percentage this season. His OPS has dropped a little bit. He's gone a little cold, but he's still raking by all standards, an 865 OPS, and that OBP is still hovering at 402 on the season. I mean, if you have a guy that's getting on base at a 40% clip, he's doing something right. But Tauchman walks. Bellinger singles to move him over, and not only move him over, but just an incredible piece of base running. And this was something that the three of us in the bleachers last night talked about, was how important it is with, you know, Bellinger gets that single. If it gets a little deeper into the corner, it probably is a double, but it hits off the wall and Tauchman just goes. He doesn't even think and hesitate. It's first to third, get into position, because then exactly what they needed to happen. Christopher Morel comes up, hits a freaking laser to mid center. And that's more than enough to score Tauchman from third. You manufacture a run. It's not pretty, but you get it done. And they tied the game. And then in the ninth is when it got crazy. I'll tell you right now, again, from a fan's perspective, Nick, that ball that Hap ran down on the warning track, as soon as it left the bat, I think every person in the outfield felt their butt pucker in just fear of like, oh, shit. Because that ball, I mean, it was put in orbit. It was not an easy out by any means. Azokar, I think is how you pronounce his name. He put a charge into that ball. And you saw Hap and PCA running for it. And based on the angle, everybody's like, oh, shit, there's no way PCA gets there. It's going to have to be Hap. Ian Hap, we know his bat's been cold. There's a lot of whispers out there about because of that production, but you cannot deny the glove. The two-time Gold Glover comes through in a big spot. And, I mean, that effectively, I think it was Rick Sutcliffe. Somebody said, you know, Michael Bush plays hero and saves the game. He's like, no, Hap saved the game. Bush won the game. Yep. And because that catch was absolutely huge in that moment. But then, Nick, I wrote an article over at ontapsportsnet.com today because that was the best game I had ever been to at Wrigley by far. Between Imanaga's performance, between just what ended up happening. But there was just in the top of the ninth, the rain started. There was this crazy roar with the rain starting. People were like, oh my goodness, the rain. Everybody's just sitting there, and it wasn't enough to like quite drench everybody, but it was enough to like, as I put it in the article today, and I encourage everybody to go read it. I thought this was the most poetic thing I think I've ever written, in my humble opinion, is just what this felt like. And it really added to the ambiance of the night, because it was just like humid, warm kind of spring night at Wrigley. The rain's kind of just dropping enough to be noticeable. And I'm not even kidding when I say this, Nick. First off, the two in the bleachers will confirm this for me the next time we're on the mic. I literally looked over at them because they were both to my left. And I said, and I was like, oh, who's got a dinger point here? And we were like, Nick does. I said, good. Let Nick have the dinger point. Let's end this thing right now with a homer.
I love it.
And again, it was one of those situations where like, because it was the first pitch of the at-bat, I don't even think people realized that the bottom of the ninth had started yet. And all you hear is the crack of the bat. And you know, as a baseball fan, most fans know, especially when you're in attendance, there's certain bat cracks where you're like, oh yeah, that's the one. That was it. And everybody's just, and I think my favorite part about sitting in left field, you can pretty well size up balls that are hit to left at Wrigley because they typically carry, especially in the summertime. It's fun when you can watch them go to right, because you can almost do the mental math in your head as you look at it, like the mental geometry and like physics of it, of like, oh yeah, that's getting out of the park. And that's exactly how that was based on how it was hit. I think I took Tyler by the shirt and went like this, like just pure excitement. And that ball was launched off the bat. And I mean, like if anybody hasn't seen the video that Marquee put out this morning, it's no audio. It's no like boo call. It's no pat call. It's just the sound of Wrigley. It's kind of like, it gives you chills because it was just the roar. And then you hear the decibels of the roar increase as the ball hits in the bleachers and everybody realizes it's game over. And truly one of the most incredible moments I've ever seen in person at a base. It was absolutely electric being there. I lost my voice last night. I'm surprised I have a voice today, to be entirely honest with you right now.
That's
like
crazy.
Michael Bush just launching one into orbit, breaking his homer drought after that hot start in April. I mean, just it literally was everything you could have asked for, man.
I have goosebumps listening to you explaining it.
It was awesome.
I was like, holy crap. No, I'm sure it was. And I picked Michael Bush because I'm like, he's coming around. He's getting a home run.
And so, you know what's crazy about Bush is like, I feel like a lot of people have been dogging on Bush. Bush is still getting on base. He's still getting base hits. Like, he went cold from a power standpoint, but like, he's had those 2-3 hit games still where, you know, he's bouncing singles through and like, he's showing that he's not just a power hitter, right? Like he's a complete hitter. Yeah, maybe he's not going to hit 300, but I mean, he's still batting what, around 260 right now after that home run last night. I think
exactly
like 257 or something like that.
Something, yeah.
That's still a nice number out of a guy who, by most Dodgers fans' perspective, given the fact that he was stuck behind guys, were calling, I don't want to say calling him a bust, but they were like, well, is this guy ever going to be more than a one something hitter in the major leagues? Opportunity is a hell of a thing to get guys to come around. And so far this year, I mean, Michael Bush has absolutely done that. Darren says, I think Tyler's Banshee scream got behind it and sent it an extra 40 feet. He gave a lot of those last night. If you haven't seen the Cubs on Tap content from last night, do go see it. Listening to him yell in the bleachers and watching everybody turn around and look at him was my favorite part of the night. It was pure comedy because every time just shoot out, and you would just see people like seven rows down being like, "What the hell's going on up there?" It was awesome. It was so much fun. We went to Murphy's and celebrated a little bit afterwards. Murphy's was bumping with people after the game. I mean, it was electric, and that is why today's title is. Of today's episode is San Diego hates rain, because the rain came and the Cubs rallied and they got the walk-off winner. Because then today, Nick, today was not great, Bob. This was the epitome of a quick turnaround. I mean, you end last night in such a high note, and then you got to play a baseball game, what, by math standards, less than 18 hours later, right? Give or take.
Yep.
The Cubs looked horrible, at least offensively. We got to give flowers where they're due. Hayden Wesneski, despite giving up the 3 earned today, just 1 walk, 7 hits, but he battled around a lot of that contact. It was a lot of soft contact as well. And 3 Ks, he still has a 1.59 ERA on the season, but he unfortunately gets the loss because, again, in his six-plus innings of work, that was all the Padres needed. The Cubs mustered 3 total base runners in this game today on Wednesday. A Yan Gomes infield single, which he only beat by the slightest of margins, and 2 walks issued by Dylan Cease. That's it. Their bullpen, perfect. Wandy Peralta, Robert Suarez looked nasty. And Dylan Cease looked nasty. 12 Ks. On the day for Cease in 7 innings of work. He threw 113 pitches. and he mowed through the Cubs lineup. And I'll tell you what, Nick, we're talking about emotion. Remember, I told them we're going to tie all this together. The emotion of Monday, the excitement of Justin Steele's return, the emotion of welcoming Yu Darvish back again to Wrigley. Tuesday, the return of Bellinger, the excitement of a walk-off winner, the down when the Profar ball leaves the ballpark, right? The emotional roller coaster. The emotional roller coaster to today, because you knew Dylan Cease was going to take it up the Cubs and shove it up the Cubs' ass, and that's exactly what he did. To the tune of 7 innings, 12 Ks, 2 walks, 1 hit.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And as you're watching, you're seeing his pitch counts going up. It's going up. You're like, maybe if they just kind of hang in there and work his pitch count, you'll get him out by the fifth.
I thought the same thing, Nick. You
know, I'm like, just get him out of here. Like, oh. But he got all the way to the high leverage guys in the bullpen, and they just finished it off. And I just kind of, at the end, you're just kind of nodding your head going, yep, yep, exactly what you said. Dylan Cease just right up there. He knew too. He looked like a dominant ace out there today. Like, but the Cubs also looked, like you said, they looked really bad. They had some terrible plate appearances. Morel looked like he was like not enjoying baseball, which was very weird. It's just like they looked very dead out there.
Me thinks that the Cubs were hungover today.
From such a high of last night, they're like,
yeah.
Oh, we got to face Dylan
Cease. Emotionally hungover. Yeah. Maybe some guys were literally hungover too, but emotionally hungover for sure. I mean, it really did. Hayden looked good. All things considered, Hayden Wesneski pitched well today.
Yeah.
And truly, I mean, the bullpen was great today. I think that's the one thing like that makes this game just piss me off even more. You know. Because Richard Lovelady comes in, gets two outs. He doesn't give up a hit, walks one, K's two, and then Owsley comes in, pitches an inning and a third of perfect baseball, and then you get a really good inning out of Keegan Thompson in the ninth where he gives up the one hit, but he strikes out three. The bullpen was fine. The starting was fine. Just the bats were such hot dog shit that, like, The pitching is almost forgotten about how actually good it was in this game today. The pitching showed up. The bats very much did not. And unfortunately, that is the big difference here. I do want to get to a couple of comments here quickly, Nick, before we continue our discussion. Bernie says Bush is a plus, 100%. Bush has been great. And yeah, she said it. They are tired. I'm sure they are. And they played a lot of baseball lately, too, especially – with the road trip out east, coming back, you had a hard-fought series against the Brew Crew, etc. Darren said, and then the depression set in reference to today's game. And like Jay said, at least the Brewers lost today. And, of course, those bastards won yesterday, too, which is what it makes me even more mad. So the Cubs and Brewers are still deadlocked right at the top of the NL Central because these two teams just continue to mirror themselves after that series over the weekend. But, Nick, one other thing I think about today's game that just kind of is disappointing, to say the least, is like you said, like, just nobody looked like they wanted to play. No Swanson in the lineup today, which I know he's been cold, but there's something about his presence in the lineup that I feel like helps this team, even when he's not hitting. But he's supposedly got some little knee issue that he's dealing with, and they wanted to rest him today. So you get Mastroboni coming in and playing second. Nico bumps over to short. Nico gets whacked in the wrist with a pitch early in the game.
Terrifying.
To the point where he came back wearing like a padded sleeve right here. And on top of that, I want to know how much that affected his performance at the plate today, because did you see that 98-mile-per-hour fastball that was like a foot and a half off the plate away?
And swung at it? Yeah. And in the broadcast, Chris Jardy's like, well, that cutter has a little action to the outside. It's like
action.
It's like never on the plate. That was never a strike.
No.
It was so uncharacteristic. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was like, what the heck? And on game day, you can even see the pitch is like, you know, they give you the little strike zone. You're like, what is happening?
Yeah. That's and even point. On the live broadcast, when they show the box, I mean, you can see.
Yeah, you see.
That ball is easily a foot off the plate. And I mean, that ball is almost in the left-handed batter's box. And You know, Nico usually doesn't swing at that. So it was interesting to see. Again, just today's game was just really weird. Like weird Wednesday day game after a night game, especially after a crazy walk-off. Like it ended up being disappointment, but Cubs are still tied for first in the NL Central, still looking good. They're 22-16 now after today, so all is still right. They're well above 500 and still playing decent ball. But, Nick, I want to talk just quickly here a little bit about the offense, because last season this was a top six offense in baseball. Largely the same roster, right? I mean, what's the only difference? Maybe that you'll have more of, hopefully, Seiya Suzuki this year and more of Cody Bellinger. But they were sixth in the league last year in runs scored. Right now, they're currently 11th. No, not bad. Just outside the top 10. And you and I went through the top 10. It's literally from 11th to 4th. It's a separation of like 14 runs for every team. So it's close. But you can tell how much the bats have cooled off since that early start in April, because the Cubs were – what, 2-3 for the first couple weeks of the season and runs scored, to plummet almost 10 full spots. It just shows how cold this lineup has gotten. And again, how much they missed Cody Bellinger, and at least he's back now, and how much they currently miss Seiya Suzuki, which we're going to talk about next. But I wanted to bring that to light, because I think There's now numbers that we can look at and be like, yeah, they've cooled off a little bit, and they're going to need to pick it up a little bit if they want to continue winning games here in the month of May.
I agree with you 100%. They have cooled off. You can see it from the eyeball test. You can also see it, like you said, statistically. And I think that it just goes to show you that they're human. So you go on a road trip, you deal with all the things you deal with on the road trip, you come back, maybe you are a little tired, like Bernie said, maybe you are a little out of it. But baseball, it's a grueling sport. There's 162 games. You have to kind of, that's why it's very unique. Like games like today, you have an off day tomorrow, and then you have a new team that you're coming to play. Some managers, they kind of punt. We've said that before, they punt. It looked like the Cubs as a whole, the lineup, punted. And they were just like, we're happy with our win yesterday. We salvaged not getting swept. Let's just move on. That's just not what you want to see early on like this, but it happens. It's baseball. So the offense, I think, is going to come around. I really do. I don't know if it'll be April level, because that was just insane. Like you said, like second in the league. But I think they will level out. They'll reach the median there. But ultimately, Cubs, like, they are dependent on good at-bats. I've noticed that. The one guy that gives you great at-bats is Mike Tauchman. You can look at him.
Yeah.
They should all be like Mike Tauchman. Because, like, when they grind down those pitchers, when they're getting the singles here and there, they have guys that will eventually get the power. So they start to really just, like, it's like a well-oiled machine. But when things aren't going like that, then the offense gets cold. So I just hope they come back and they look better, especially in the next series here.
I like what you just said about the punt. And here's why. Because I was looking at the schedule as you were talking here. And it's – you look at it and all of a sudden you go, you know what? Maybe mentally they did kind of look at today's game. And maybe Craig even kind of knew the team's tired. And, like, if it goes south, it goes south today. But this is the only series in this month outside of the two with Atlanta that isn't a divisional series. So the Cubs may very well looked at this and said, hey, look, this is the last time we see the Padres all year. You know, we saw them in their ballpark. We probably should have taken 2 out of 3, maybe even swept them there. We didn't. Now they come here, probably still should have taken 2 out of 3. You know, you can make the argument even in that Monday game that you had a really good chance at winning if it's not for that one bad inning. They may have looked at the schedule today and went, well, we have an off day tomorrow. And then we go to Pittsburgh, to Atlanta, home for 4 with Pittsburgh before an off day, and then 3 with the Braves at home before 3 on the road with the Cardinals and 4 with the Brewers. You have 2 off days in the entire month. And it may have been just kind of a mental off day for the Cubs today, because they said, hey, we're home. We have a short flight to Pittsburgh. There's an off day in between. They don't play till 5:40 local time on Friday now. So it's a night game. So they effectively get almost two full days of rest if you really think about it that way. So this could very well have been one where they looked at it and said, hey, look, if there's one series we look at this month and say, if we lose it, so be it. It was probably that one and probably the one in Atlanta, because they're like, hey, at least when we're at home, let's try to take two out of three against the Braves. But you want to take probably three out of four against the Pirates. You want to take two out of three against the Pirates this weekend. You want to take two out of three against the Cardinals at the end of the month, probably three out of four against the Brewers. And then you have three games to pretty much start June with the Reds. It's a really big NL Central month, like Juice and I talked about a couple shows ago. So this is, I think, where they might have been mentally. So I just wanted to expand on, I think, an incredible thought that you had there, just based on what is to come for the Cubs. Speaking of things that are to come, before we look ahead to the actual schedule, Seiya Suzuki, first game on the rehab assignment today with the Iowa Cubs. He did not play the full game. He was ultimately lifted after three at-bats. No big deal. It's pretty normal for rehab stints. I would make the argument that they might have pulled him today because they were like, yeah, we've seen enough. Two for two, two singles, two runs scored. He also had a walk in his three at-bats. So two official at-bats and a walk today for Seiya Suzuki. He looks ready to hit. And my bet was the Cubs. Jed was on the phone during the game going, yeah, get him the hell out and put him on a plane to Pittsburgh. We'll see him on Friday. Because I don't even think he needs to play tomorrow. If he looks healthy, get him in the lineup ASAP, yeah, because after today's offensive performance, they could have used his two singles and a walk today against Dylan Cease and these Padres.
100%. They're going to need that shot in the arm. And Belly gave them that coming back. So, like you said, hopefully Jed's like, get him on the plane. And in Pittsburgh, he's going to just tear it up. I'm just hoping that's what happens.
I hope so. And honestly, I feel like the Cubs as a team have always hit well in Pittsburgh. It just feels that way. PNC very much lends to being that kind of ballpark. Even though it's a deceptively weird field, like dimensionally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the dimension.
Because like right field looks atrocious with the wall, but when you're sitting in the stadium, it really isn't that bad. And then you kind of turn around and look at left field and you're like, yeah, that looks manageable, but it looks deeper than it like actually is. It's a very like aesthetically weird ballpark, but again, one that the Cubs seem to hit well in, and one that hopefully the guy that is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, finds a way to start hitting, because Cubs need a lot more out of Ian Happ than they've gotten recently. So if there's any time like the present to get right, it's when you go back home, because he loves to hit in the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I hope he does that as well. Nick, as we alluded to, Cubs are off on Thursday. I will say here, and I have the list up in front of me. If you're watching along with us right now, turn on Marquee Sports Network. The Myrtle Beach Pelicans are playing on Marquee right now. Passiola is a prospect worth watching. He was a draft pick a season ago. I believe he was their fourth round selection or third round selection, if I remember correctly. You have Mr. Hernandez in the lineup. He's batting three, playing second in this game. A fun game for some of the low-level depth of this organization right now that they have. And then tomorrow, another really good day if you want to watch the prospects. The Cubs are off, and if you're just sitting around like I'm going to be tomorrow, especially because it's going to rain in Chicago, so if you're listening locally, it's going to be kind of a shitty day. Noon, you got Iowa and Columbus. That's going to be a great game. Obviously, the Iowa Cubs are absolutely loaded, so that'll be a lot of fun. And then in the evening, 6 p.m. start, you got South Bend versus Cedar Rapids at Four Winds Field. Jefferson Rojas is a lot of fun to watch, and there's some other good players down in South Bend. It's not quite Tennessee. I don't actually know the next time we will see Tennessee on Marquee. I'm actually looking at it all right now. We will not see Tennessee at all this month on the Marquee Sports Network, which is actually very disappointing if I'm being brutally honest.
Yeah.
They have not been on at all this month, but every other team in the system will be. Now I'm down a rabbit hole. Pardon me, folks, for a hot second. I'm going down a little bit of a rabbit hole here. We won't see. When do we see the Tennessee Smokies? Do we not see the Tennessee Smokies? I don't think the Cubs see the Tennessee Smokies. Now, granted, if you have MLB TV, you can watch all their games. So I'm not – this is just for people that maybe only have Marquee. Maybe you don't have MLB TV. I have MLB TV, so I can I know I can watch all the minor league games when I want to. But, there's no Tennessee, even in the month of June. I don't know what that's all about. So if you want to watch Tennessee, because Tennessee's loaded too. Matt Shaw's down there. Kevin Alcantara is down there. If you want to watch those guys, go get MLB TV. It's worth it. Absolutely worth it. If you like watching minor league baseball, you'll get your money's worth out of it for sure. But again, so then in right now, Myrtle Beach is on. They're playing Augusta, and then tomorrow we got Iowa and South Bend on the docket. So a lot of youth on Marquee Sports Network over the next 2 days. And then Friday, we start the series in Pittsburgh, or by we, I mean the Cubs. We'll start a three-game set. All pitchers are currently technically TBD, according to MLB.com. But if you believe fantasy baseball as much as I do, Jameson Taillon is projected to throw on Friday. Steele is projected to throw on Sunday. But I believe he would be on 5 days rest if they wanted to throw him Saturday. Which, if that's the case, we would have a Paul Skeens versus Justin Steele matchup on Saturday. Because for anybody that hasn't seen the news yet, Pittsburgh Pirates top prospect and former number one overall pick Paul Skeens is making his debut on May 11th, which is Saturday's game against the Cubs. So that'll be another element to watch for in this upcoming series. Nick, just quickly here, the times for each of these games before we get some of your thoughts on what the Cubs need to do to get a series win in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's a 5:40 Central time start on Friday night. So this one will be right as you're getting off of work for all of you at home. Just flip on Marquee on your phone and watch that one if you're commuting home. 5:40 start. It'll be a 3:05 game on Saturday afternoon, and then it will be a 12:35 start on Mother's Day on Sunday, which means we will have to figure out what our show looks like because it is Mother's Day, and everybody's naturally going to have plans with their moms, as we highly encourage. It might be a solo show from one of our co-hosts. We have no idea, but we will be back at some point probably on Sunday with a show. And then we will return to our regularly scheduled programming for the rest of the week. We will have a watch along this week. I'm very excited to announce that there will be a watch along. It's probably going to be Tuesday, is my bet. And here's why. Because the Cubs will leave Atlanta on Wednesday. They come home to start the four-game set with Pittsburgh on Thursday. Normally we'd run a show on Thursdays to recap that series. So it might be a Wednesday show for the Atlanta show series, and then we will be back then that following Sunday with that Pittsburgh series. I will be at the ballpark on the 16th, so I will be sure to do plenty of good stuff there. Jace says, do the watch along on Monday. We don't like doing the watch alongs on Monday because our friends over at the Dingers podcast go live on Mondays, and we want to encourage all you guys to go listen to them because they're our good friends and part of our OnTap Sportsnet family. So they will be live on Monday at 8:00 during that Braves game, actually probably be toward the end of that Braves game. So it'll almost effectively be like a post-game show of sorts with the Dingers boys. Be sure to tune into that. Then you'll hear from us on Tuesday and Wednesday of that Atlanta series, as Bernie said a little bit over as well. Tennessee is rocking. And speaking of tomorrow, Jay says he's rooting for the Cardinals tomorrow night because he wants the Cubs to be up a half game on Friday. It's the one time I can support rooting for the Cardinals is when it helps the Cubbies in the event of everything. Jay says the live show Monday afternoon recapping the Pittsburgh series. Okay, got it. So for Mother's Day, I believe is what he's is insinuating. Got it. Maybe that's not a bad idea. We'll take that into consideration. But Nick, what do the Cubs need to do in the Steel City to get 2 out of 3 at minimum this weekend?
First, the bats need to wake the heck up. That's number one, first and foremost. And then the starting pitching has just been so good. So good. They just got to keep doing what they're doing. The illness really falls on the offense, really. They need to wake up. They need to be better. I'd like to see some more stealing, a little more aggressiveness. I know that's not, like, obviously the formula up to this point. But in this series, it'd be great to just put them away. It's going to be hard to get the sweep, but it'd be nice to. Skeens frightens me a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. But other than that, they just, I just hope that they really have like an offensive bout where it doesn't matter what Pittsburgh's pitching is. They just are going to go out and just put a crooked number up on the board. I kind of miss that.
Yeah.
And they're just like, well, they're just pouring it on.
Yeah. Crooked numbers are nice. We like crooked numbers here. Cubs up that. I agree with you, man. They're going to have to ride the pitching this weekend, especially because you're probably going to have all of your horses throwing in the series. My guess is it could be Tyone Steele, Imanaga over the weekend. That would give the Cub because of the extra day of rest. I could also see a world where Imanaga waits and they throw him on Monday. We'll have to wait and see. But it will be encouraging to see what ends up happening there. So you probably will have your big horses this weekend in Pittsburgh, which is great because Pittsburgh's going to kind of have their big horses. Jared Jones has been a stud already. I think he's technically expected to throw on Friday. And then obviously that means Skeens on Saturday. So, you know, two of their top guys, but, you know, ruin the kid's debut. It's okay. We know he's going to be nasty for a long time. Just for the love of God, please just ruin his debut because I don't think I could sit here and watch him just shove it down the Cubs' throats in his debut. That would just would make me deathly sad. But I agree with you, man. It's going to be on the offense. They need to start getting things right. Hopefully, Seiya Suzuki is a part of that equation this weekend, as he was kind of expected to be. And then really just two major names the Cubs are waiting on to get back, Drew Smyly and Jordan Wicks, who will be back here at some point in the month of May. I believe they're both due to return or can return, not this or not after Mother's Day weekend, but the following week, I think is how it works. But again, you can read all that over on TabSportsCent.com. Those injury updates, you can see where they're scheduled to return. Darren says, did anyone get the dinger pick right on Saturday to win the bobblehead? As a matter of fact, someone did. You got the dinger pick right. You and Morel on Saturday, even though we were all like tragically upset that you didn't take Horner and he got his first home run in the game. But luckily, Morel still got you one. Yep. Nick's on a little bit of a hot. You're on a little bit of a hot streak, man. You got two in the last what 5 days?
Yeah. Yep.
That's good. That's good.
Coming for you, Juice. I'm coming for you.
You know who is coming for Juice is Joey. Joey's been on a little bit of yep. a heater as well. He's up to 7 now on the season. So, and I am in a tie with Tyler at the basement. We both hit 2. Bellinger got Tyler out of the basement last night and back into a tie with me. Nick, are you a Bears fan? Darren wants to know.
Heck yeah, I'm a Bears fan.
Darren said he has a 1960s Bears bobblehead that he Ooh. Is looking to get rid of. So he might be in your DMs asking for an address to send that over. We appreciate you, Darren. But yeah, Nick got the dinger pick right. So that'll be a fun one indeed. And yeah, we're gonna keep hopefully getting dinger picks right. We were a little cold there for a while, I think, as a group outside of Juice. Juice is now cold and everybody else is slowly making it work here as things progress. One quick note, San Diego has a tough test. They got to go all the way back home. 6 games at home with the Dodgers and Rockies before they're back out east the following weekend after an off day for 3 with the Braves and 3 with the Reds. And that'll be something interesting to keep an eye on for them moving forward. Nick, before we get out of here, I want to remind everybody, Cubs on Tap, 1 of 2 official podcasts here at the On Tap Sports Network, covering the Chicago Cubs, as we mentioned a little bit earlier. Our friends over at the Dingers podcast are live every Monday night, so be sure to tune in with them for their next show. You can catch their last show as well right here on the On Tap Sports Network. You can follow them at Dinger Cubs on the socials. You can follow us at Cubbies on Tap on the socials. I am at Loose on Tap. Nick is at Nick_on tap. And you know the drill. Follow everybody else. Juice on Tap, Teddy Fred H70, Joey Knows Nothing. And give our boy Bobby Foster some love and a follow at SilentBob_2 on the socials. Bulls, Bears, Blackhawks. Blackhawks get number 2 pick in the NHL draft. You'll be seeing a lot of GM Ron content over on the Four Feathers crew. The Bulls guys are ramping up. A lot of cool Michael Jordan memories are going to be coming up because of the time of the year and anniversaries coming up. But they have a busy summer ahead of them as well. And the Bears guys now, we're just cruising into September and training camp in August because all the good shit's done. The draft is come and gone. The free agency is come and gone. And now it's just the buildup for the end of the year. But do follow all those other shows as well. And Cubs fans, you know the drill. You have friends that like the Southsiders. So do we. They're in a bad spot right now. So they need all the emotional support they can possibly get. send your friends to our friends over at Socks on Tap, and they can all be friends and wallow over what is an absolute dumpster fire right now at 35th and Shields in Chicago, Illinois. Sean asks, who are the starters for the Pirates series? I think it's Jones on Friday. It'll be Skeens for sure on Saturday. Sunday is TBD. Both pitching probables are all listed as TBD right now, Sean. So be actually on the lookout, because I'm sure there will be an article posted here in the coming 2 days now from ontapsportsnet.com about the starters for this three-game set. Ontapsportsnet.com, at ontapsportsnet on the socials, the ontapsportsnet. Go and check out what's on tap in Chicago sports. And as always, like, subscribe, hit the bell button on the YouTube, and you'll know when we go live and all the other great shows here at ontapsportsnet go live. Nick, I appreciate you joining me, buddy. It's been a long time since we got to do a show together. Unfortunately, it was under circumstances of a Cubs series loss, but we had the incredible electricity on Tuesday night at the ballpark, and it was phenomenal and well worth the series, if we're being honest. If they're going to lose it, at least they get the one win in electric fashion. But we will be back most likely on Sunday. If that changes, be sure to follow along with Cubs on Tap on the socials, and you'll know if that changes. And then we will also provide some updates at that time about watch-alongs and all that good stuff coming up next week. Nick, appreciate you, my mans. What do you say? We get out of here the only way to know Cubs on Tap?
Yep. Fuck those Cardinals.
Yeah, fuck the Brewers too. And let's go, Cubbies.